From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, we discuss the presidential campaign with two political satirists, Al Franken and Bill Maher. Franken wrote for Saturday Night Live for 15 years and also performed on the show. He's the author of a satirical campaign diary. Bill Maher is the host of Politically Incorrect. Political satire coming up on Fresh Air. First, the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. Emergency officials in Taiwan say at least 66 people have been killed in the crash of a Singapore Airlines passenger jet. Officials say 84 people were injured and 30 more have not been accounted for. At least 25 Americans were reported to be among the passengers. The Boeing 747 was trying to take off on a flight to Los Angeles when it apparently struck an object on the runway. Witnesses say the tarmac was strewn with flaming wreckage. Bad weather is hampering the efforts of rescue workers, and the casualty figures are conflicting. The presidential race shifted to the Pacific Northwest today, where both Democrat Al Gore and Republican George W. Bush are campaigning in Portland, Oregon. NPR's Anthony Brooks filed this report from the Gore campaign.
Oregon usually votes Democratic in presidential elections, but this year all bets are off, thanks in part to Green Party candidate Ralph Nader. In Portland today, Gore cast himself as a reliable steward of the economy and focused on tax cuts as a defining difference with Bush. He charged that Bush's $1.6 trillion across-the-board tax cut will jeopardize the current prosperity.
I will not let us be dragged back into a cycle of big tax giveaways to the wealthy, big deficits, big debt, and repeat recessions. We're not going back.
Gore proposes to spend about a third as much on tax cuts, but target them to middle-class families. Bush calls the plan too complicated and says it leaves out millions of Americans. Gore now heads to California, then red eyes to delegate-rich Florida, which Republicans had once counted as safely theirs, but which is now being contested by the Democrats. Anthony Brooks, NPR News, Portland, Oregon.
The Bush campaign has issued a new TV ad accusing rival Al Gore of bending the truth about Social Security and prescription drugs. The candidate, George W. Bush, affirmed his support for faith-based charitable organizations today during a visit in California. The Napster Internet service announced today it would become a partner of one of the major record labels that's been suing to shut it down in federal court. NPR's Rick Carr reports from New York.
Napster allows users to trade copies of music over the internet without paying for them. Germany's Bertelsmann AG owns one of the five major record labels that's suing Napster, claiming the service amounts to theft. Bertelsmann and Napster said they'd work together to create a new subscription version of the service. Customers would pay a monthly fee, likely to be a few dollars, for access to Bertelsmann recordings. Officials with the label said they'd loan the internet firm an undisclosed sum. In exchange, Napster will develop the new service, and once it meets with the record label's approval, Bertelsmann will withdraw from the record industry lawsuit. The Time Warner record label and the record industry trade group praised the deal. A federal appellate court in San Francisco could render the announcement moot, though, when it rules on a lower court injunction that could shut Napster down. Rick Carr, NPR News, New York.
In stocks, the Dow gained 134 points today. This is NPR News. Comedian, musician, and author Steve Allen has died. He was 78. As the first host of The Tonight Show, Allen is credited with pioneering the late-night TV talk show. He was an accomplished musician and composer who wrote some 4,000 songs, as well as many books and plays. He appeared in movies, on Broadway, and a number of television programs, including his own Steve Allen Show. Allen was praised as a great impromptu wit who could ad-lib comedy in almost any situation. 1 year after Egypt Air Flight 990 dove into the ocean off Nantucket, friends and family are gathering to remember loved ones at a memorial in Newport, Rhode Island. Martha Biebinger reports from member station WRNI.
About 600 mourners gathered under a tent at the water's edge in Newport to dedicate a granite monument and hear from crash investigators, members of the clergy, and relatives of the victims. National Transportation Safety Board Chairman James Hall said he has tried to focus on the victims and their families as he searches for the cause of the crash.
While our words of sympathy may seem shallow and inadequate at such a time of great suffering, on behalf of the President of the United States, we again offer and ask you to accept our heartfelt condolences for your loss.
The NTSB has suggested that the crash was intentional, while Egyptian authorities are still looking for a mechanical cause. For NPR News, I'm Martha Biebinger in Providence.
In stocks today, the technology-heavy NASDAQ Composite Index gained 179 points, or 5.6%. It closed at 3,369. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, makers of cholesterol-free vegetable oil, ADM, supermarket to the world, on the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Last night, George Bush was a guest on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Al Gore will be on tonight. During this campaign, where the likability factor has become so important, the candidates are trying to prove that they have a sense of humor. On today's Fresh Air, we're going to talk with two political satirists about the campaign. Al Franken worked on Saturday Night Live as a writer and performer for 15 years. He supports Al Gore. Bill Maher is the host of Politically Incorrect. He supports Ralph Nader. We approached several comics and satirists who are Republicans, and for various reasons, they each declined. But more about that later. On Sunday evening, Gore and Bush will play themselves in the opening sketch of SNL's Presidential Bash 2000. My guest Al Franken co-wrote that sketch and is a consulting producer for the program. He's also the author of the bestseller Rush Limbaugh is a Big Fat Idiot and a satirical campaign diary called Why Not Me? He's working for the Gore campaign, stumping and writing. I asked if he's writing jokes for Gore.
Yeah, I've been part of a team that has written for him. I've written jokes for the Al Smith dinner and for the Gridiron dinner and for some little other things. So every once in a while, I'm on a conference call with the vice president sometimes, but you know, with other writers, including Kristen Gore.
That's his daughter. Is she the one who writes for the sitcom, or is she the other one?
She's the one who writes for Futurama.
Right. Okay. So can you tell us a couple of the lines you've written for Gore for one of those comedy dinners?
Let me see. Well, I wrote this thing for the Gridiron, which he can't use on the stump, but which was pretty successful at the Gridiron. And now I use it, which is that this was my ploy for him for the debate, which was Gore would say something negative about the Bush-Quayle administration, at which point Bush would feel compelled to defend his father, President Bush. And at that point, Gore would say, I knew George Bush. George Bush was a friend of mine. And you, sir, are no George Bush, which I believe would hopelessly confuse Governor Bush.
Do you know who wrote Tipper's recent line, it's not the dating game, you don't have to fall in love with Al Gore, I did that. What you need to do is figure out who you're going to vote for, and I know that you're going to weigh experience. Do you know who came up with that?
I bet you Tipper did.
Yeah?
Yeah, that sounds like Tipper. I really like Tipper. Mm-hmm. You know, the first time, well, it's part of the reason I like Gore. The first time I met Tipper was in 1994 at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and I was speaking. This was the first time I ever talked to a big Washington Beltway crowd. I was really nervous, and before the dinner, there was a cocktail party for the dais, and the vice president was there, and Tipper and the president and Mrs. Clinton. I took Tipper aside, and I said, I have a joke about your husband. And she said, what's the joke? This is the true story. I said, I'm a little worried that this might be a little over the line. My instinct tells me not to do it. She says, what's the joke? And I said, okay, here's the joke. Vice President Gore reaffirmed his commitment to the environment today when he announced a new policy regarding the stick up his butt. Instead of replacing the stick every day with a new stick, as he does now, he announced that he will keep the same stick up there throughout the rest of the administration. Evidently, this will save an entire rainforest. And she looked at me, and she said, I'd go with my instinct. So I really like her. And now one thing, you know, the kiss at the convention?
Yeah.
That was my idea.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, no, no. In fact, I demonstrated it for them. Not on Tipper. On Karenna. And the kisses were very, the eldest Gore girl, daughter. Very similar kisses, except with the one with Tipper and the vice president, there was less struggling. And it didn't end with Tipper kneeing the vice president. Also, the Secret Service didn't drag him away, but he had to, of course, he had to speak. And also, he approached her really sort of head on, and I came over the back. But anyway, it was very, very similar. It was my idea.
In your book, Why Not Me, which was a satirical campaign diary with you running as president, you chose as your running mate, for your vice presidential running mate, Joe Lieberman. Now, this book was published, mm-hmm. was it 1 year ago or 2 years ago?
Like a year and a half ago.
Okay. So, you didn't know that Al Gore would actually choose Joe Lieberman.
I was prescient.
You were prescient. Right. Yes. Why did you choose him?
I picked him for a different reason. I picked him to balance the ticket because I'm a reformed Jew.
Go ahead.
Well, part of the premise of my book was that there are many premises above. One of them is in the book, I'm a jerk, hard as that is to believe. And but I pick an entirely Jewish cabinet, and including a Jewish running mate. And if you kind of looked around the horizon of prominent Jews in America who you could pick as a running mate, Joe sort of leaped forward. You wouldn't pick Barbara Boxer. You wouldn't pick Frank Lautenberg. You know, you wouldn't. So I ended up with Joe, and I know Joe, and he's great. Actually, Joe read the book, and he came up with some bumper stickers.
Yeah.
One was Frank and Lieberman, no bull, no pork.
That's good.
Joe is really funny, and I was just in Nashville last week and just talking to Tad Devine and Carter Eskew and those guys, and they were talking about, I guess, the vice president's going on Leno, and I was talking about Joe doing one of these shows. And he said, well, we're trying to keep him off these shows because we don't want him to... He's maybe getting a reputation of being sort of too funny. And I thought, and he does have, if you know him, he does have that, you know, reform rabbi who wants to be a comedian vibe. A little bit, you know what I mean? He's got that kind of, he loves humor. So, and I guess that they might feel like cut into his gravitas. But I think he's got plenty of gravitas. I think you can have gravitas and a sense of humor at the same time.
My guest is Al Franken. You wrote for Saturday Night Live for about 15 years, and now you're a consulting producer to the SNL Presidential Bash, which is scheduled for Sunday night. And I believe you co-wrote the opening sketch in which Bush and Gore will actually play themselves.
Yes, on the show, there's a little cold opening. Jim Downey, who's producing the show and who has written all the debate sketches on the show this year, who came back from from not writing for SNL to write those debate sketches, is producing the show, and he and I wrote that together. But the opening of this one, and yes, Bush and Gore appear together via the magic of a split screen.
Oh, so they're not in the same room together.
We shot it, and I wasn't there. Jim was there. When it was shot, it was in the same studio, but they were at different times. So, but it was like an hour apart because, again, they're both in town for the Al Smith dinner.
What made you think of actually, what made you or Jim Downey think of actually inviting them to play themselves as opposed to getting cast members from the show to play them, which is what usually happens?
Well, cast members from the show do play them, but I think we just had a meeting early on about this special, and it just seemed that they were so willing to go on Letterman and Leno and all those shows that it didn't seem like such a leap that they would agree to do our show.
So did you have to send the sketches into the Bush and Gore campaigns before
to
do it?
Yeah, and they were both very nice to do it, by the way. The Bush camp was very nice. And
Did they count laugh lines? Like, who had the more self-deprecating lines?
It was almost like dealing with Barack and Arafat.
Right.
Because, in fact, the first version we wrote, we had written a lot of Gore sort of taking credit for being one of the first fans of Saturday Night Live, you know, and that kind of thing, you know, exaggerating his fandom of the show and claiming and boasting about being one of the first fans and stuff. And that kind of joke. And the Bush people felt that he had too many of the jokes, and the Gore people felt that his jokes were too self-deprecatory. So we had them reacting negatively to the same thing. So we ended up taking one of the, you know, we ended up taking one of the self-deprecatory jokes out of Gore's and the Bush people volunteered to have him mispronounce words, which we never would have thought to do, but they were very nice too.
You mean they suggested
that.
It?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think, putting aside for a moment your credentials as a comic who's co-writing this sketch for Bush and Gore, do you think it's a good idea for the presidential candidates to play themselves on an SNL program? Or do you think that they should stay out of comedy like that and just do what they do for real and let the actors impersonate them?
Well, in the abstract, I don't think it's a bad idea. It can be specifically a bad idea if they get the wrong script, if they did the wrong thing. You know, some people have said it's not dignified, and I just think we're so far beyond that. So if I were in the Gore camp and Bush was going to do it, I'd want to do it. You're reaching people who don't watch, necessarily aren't watching a lot of C-SPAN. And there's no harm. And also, you know, when these guys go on Letterman or Leno, when they do these shows, you know, I'm sort of the designated pep talker for, I've talked to Lieberman before he went on Conan. I talked to Gore, talked to Hillary before they go on these shows. And all I tell them is, I have a little thing I say, which is that America doesn't want the president of the United States to be the funniest guy in the country. They don't want Robin Williams to be the president. They just want to know you're human and have a good sense of humor and just relax. And I think that it's fine. I don't think it's a waste of their time, and I think it's good to show that they have a sense of humor. But again, they have to be careful exactly what they're doing, though.
Well, Nader was on Saturday Night Live recently in a sketch with Rob Lowe that I thought was very funny. It was basically, you know, Rob Lowe parroting how self-absorbed actors are with Ralph Nader, mm-hmm. parroting how self-absorbed he is as a political candidate. It was a pretty funny sketch.
I thought the beginning premise was funny, too, which was that he's telling Lorne, you wouldn't even let me in a sketch about the debate.
That's right.
Which was,
that's right.
Yeah.
I've forgotten that part.
You go, well, Ralph, you weren't in the debate.
My guest is satirist Al Franken. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest, Al Franken, is a political satirist who is now working with the Gore campaign. He wrote for and performed on Saturday Night Live for 15 years, and he's the author of the satirical campaign diary, Why Not Me? Do you think a lot of voters are kind of weighing this election as if the person who wins the election is going to have dinner with them every night and they have to decide who the best dinner companion would be?
I think there may be a little of that. You know, I have a theory, which is that Clinton has been such a successful president on so many, in so many ways. Obviously, he had one real big problem, but he's taken these record deficits, turned them into surpluses, on and on. The whole litany of successes that we've had in this presidency, economically and crime and all that stuff. And he did it with one hand tied behind his back the whole time. He was being investigated from day one. And I think people might be thinking now, you know, it probably isn't that hard to be president. I mean, if he can do such a good job while with this handicap, how hard can it be? So we'll take a flyer on Bush, who seems like a nice guy. If a little bit of a towel snapper. I went to school with guys like George W. And you didn't want to be around them when they did have a towel.
After every debate, some of the networks had focus groups in which they would talk to a group of undecided voters. And after every debate, people would get up and say, I don't know. I still can't make up my mind. I need more information.
Sure.
And I'm wondering what went through your mind watching the dialogues with the undecided voters and knowing that so much of the debate was being played to undecided voters.
I've had this experience stumping for Gore. I was in a diner in a suburb of Chicago in Illinois. I walk in. I go up to people. I say, I hope I'm not bothering you, but I'm campaign for Al Gore, and I had a guy say, I'm undecided. And I said, okay, well, what issues do you care about? And he said, the environment and medication. So I thought, okay, this is a gimme. So I laid out sort of the differences on the environment and how Bush, as governor of Texas, has appointed a chemical lobbyist to be the regulator of the environment in Texas, and how bad his record is, and how Houston's become the smoggiest city, et cetera, et cetera. Then I went into compared the two plans for prescription drugs for seniors, and he said, oh, I didn't know. Oh, I see. So I go. So now are you going to vote for Gore? He said, well, I'm still undecided. I said, okay. What other issues? I'll tell you one thing, he said. I want to keep guns out of schools. So then I told him the comparative stances on guns, on the Brady Bill, which Bush won't say he's for or against, that kind of thing. And after that, he said, oh, I didn't know that. Okay. I go, are you going to vote for Gore? He said, well, I still don't know. And at a certain point, you just kind of got to move on, you know?
You know, another guest on our show today is Bill Maher, the host of Politically Incorrect, who I know that you know because you've done a lot of work
Sure.
with him on his show. And he's got a lot of problems with both Gore and Bush, and he's going to be voting for Nader. The Gore campaign is running a big campaign right now to try to wrestle away votes from Nader, hoping that those people who they wrestle away will vote for Gore. What do you think of the premise that Bush and Gore are basically the same thing and therefore better to vote for Nader?
I think it's ridiculous. I think there are just tremendous differences between these two guys. And if you just look sort of like who's on their team, I mean, it's Cheney voted against Head Start. He voted against clean water, clean air. He voted against a ban on cop killer bullets. Bush has said that his favorite Supreme Court justices are Anton Scalia and Clarence Thomas. And that's the kind of judges he'll appoint. And I think it's it's easy if you can't get elected president, which Ralph can't. And by the way, Ralph is a hero of mine. And he's saved a tremendous number of lives and I think is an icon. But he's not going to get elected president. And when you're in that position of you're not going to get elected president, you can say things that you can't say if you're going to be president. And you can say, I want universal health care the minute I get elected. and not have to say how you're going to do it. Al Gore has been in the House and in the Senate and in vice president long enough to know how the world works and to get things done and to deal with the reality of what we have in Washington, which is we have Trent Lott and we have Denny Hastert and we have Tom DeLay in Congress. And there are certain things you can't do when there's a Republican majority. So, you know, sometimes I think the most cynical people are the people who are voting for Nader and just don't care. It doesn't matter to them who what really happens. I mean, I know that Bill is, I like Bill a lot, and I think his show's great, but I know he's a pretty cynical guy. And I think it's a sort of a cynical stance to say, you know, it really doesn't make any difference. It makes a huge difference.
Where are you going to be on election night?
I've been invited to come down to Nashville. I think this is going to be such a close election that I want to watch it at home with my remote control because I want to pop around. I'm a political junkie, and I don't want to be in some, you know, room where there's 1,000 people or even a holding room where there's 40 people and not be able to control the remote, which is what you do with a remote control if you have it in your hand. And so I kind of actually want to be able to call people, find out what's happening in Minnesota, my state. When I campaign for Gore, I do campaign for local candidates in these areas, and there are a number of them who I've grown very affection. I have a lot of affection for. So I think I want to do it at home, so I can be calling people and watching the TV and eating my food. Well, my wife's cooking, not so much what I make.
Al Franken, his latest book is the satirical campaign diary, Why Not Me? He's currently working for the Gore campaign. He's a consulting producer for this Sunday's SNL Presidential Bash 2000. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. From the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From Wilmington Trust, recognizing worth in individuals and in unique programs like Fresh Air. And from Random House Incorporated's Delta Division, publisher of The Plutonium Files, America's Secret Medical Experiments in the Cold War, by investigative journalist Eileen Welsom. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, political satirist Bill Maher, host of Politically Incorrect, discusses the presidential campaign and why he wouldn't write jokes for a candidate.
Thank you.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Bill Maher, is a comic who takes politics very seriously. He's the host of Politically Incorrect. Every night, after Nightline's examination of an issue in the news, Bill Maher and his guests argue about the issues, often going for the laughs. The presidential candidates are hoping to get laughs, too, in their attempts to prove they're likable and funny. George W. Bush was on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno last night. Tonight, it's Al Gore's turn. They've both done The Letterman Show. Bill Maher is pretty cynical about these appearances.
It bothers me that any show having a candidate on treats that candidate like a movie star, yes, because they're not movie stars. And it's one thing to pimp for a movie, but these guys aren't making a movie. They're proposing to run the world. So, yes, I think it's extremely wrong to write comedy material for them and hand it to them and don't tell the audience that and let the audience think that they're brilliant and fluff up their image and give them a personality and give them a free ride. If you are having a candidate on, you are by definition then a journalist, a real journalist, and you should be doing the journalist's job, which is vetting their proposals and holding their feet to the fire. There's a reason why these candidates don't come on my show, because I wouldn't do for them what they get done everywhere else.
Have you invited them?
Of course.
You know, I think the candidates during this campaign are trying to hold back, at least they had been, trying to hold back from being too negative, worried that that voters
right.
react badly to negativity. Are there negative things you wish they would say about each other?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not for Gore, but I do think he's more qualified than Bush, and I think he's the one who has mostly been hurt by this silly idea that you don't talk about somebody else's record because that would be mean. As Ralph Nader said the other day, he said, if Gore can't defeat the bumbling Texas governor with his horrendous record, then what good is he anyway? And I sort of agree with that. I can't help but think that Bill Clinton is like a Rottweiler right now behind a fence, you know, barking, but he can't get out. And he knows that he could take George Bush apart in 2 minutes. He took his father apart, and his father was president and a lot more qualified. The idea that this Bush guy is getting this free pass and no one is mentioning that he's not terribly bright, that he's been in office for 6 years, I mean, a thinner resume, I can't imagine. That his record in Texas on things that are important to people in this election, like health care, like pollution, and even like education, is lousy. It's just amazing. He's a gutter fighter like the other ones. He pretends to hide behind this Bush integrity as if Bush integrity has any meaning in politics. It doesn't. They fight as dirty as anybody else. When I think of the Bushes, I think of Willie Horton. I think of George Bush telling me that Clarence Thomas was the most qualified person to be on the Supreme Court. I think of a lot of dirty political games they played. Not worse than most, but certainly not better than most. And somehow he is able to rise above that because nobody seems to question it. He's as big a liar and exaggerator as Gore. Oprah Winfrey asked George Bush, what's the biggest misconception of this campaign? And he said, well, that I'm here because of my father and my name. Well, that's a misconception? You mean anyone else who has only been in public service for 6 years would now be the nominee of their party without a famous name and a lot of money? Who's he kidding?
Now, you're a comic who's very politically absorbed, and most nights your show is about politics, often about the campaign now. The candidates have really been trying to show that they have a sense of humor and that they can be likable, because likability seems to be this really important voter issue for this election. As a professional comic yourself, do you care if presidential candidates have a sense of humor?
No, and people shouldn't either. And they should be told when one of them is reading a top 10 list that that man didn't write it. That's what's really unfair. You know, at least when Clinton went on Arsenio Hall and played the sax, at least he played the sax. You know, they weren't piping that in from some karaoke bar. He was doing it. These guys, you know, sometimes have their material prepared for them, which is a kind of a double hoodwink on the public. But the public is really the ones who are at fault at this. The fact that they care so much about, as you say, whether these guys are funny and likable. I've heard lots of people quoted in the paper when they do man in the street interviews. They'd say, yeah, we know Gore is smarter, and he's more capable, and yeah, I think he's more caring, and he's closer to me on the issues. But, you know, he's a know-it-all. I'm going to vote for Bush, because that's really what this is all about, is, you know, you don't want the know-it-all guy there. You don't want the smart guy in there. You want the guy you want to have a beer with. Well, you know, that's what's wrong with democracy. A lot of dumb people are voting.
Why do you think that there's this fear now of, well, he's too smart. He's a smarty pants.
Because people are not smart, and they feel uncomfortable around someone who's smarter. I mean, that's just a great indication of how stupid they can be. That even if you're not such a bright person, even if you couldn't run the world, wouldn't you just want to have the guy who could in there as opposed to the guy you'd want to have a beer with, you know? I mean, I keep calling it the Cheers election. I mean, one of them, Gore, is like Cliff, the obnoxious know-it-all, and one of them is Norm, that's Bush. He's the lovable slob that you want to drink with. But, you know, even if you were just electing the president of Cheers, you'd elect Cliff.
My guest is comic Bill Maher, the host of Politically Incorrect. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bill Maher. He's the host of Politically Incorrect. Now, you've said on your show that you're really not for Gore or for Bush. You're supporting Nader in this election. Why?
Yeah, but, you know, I just was told by somebody that Nader stole my Bore and Gush, so now I'm not voting for him. No, I'm kidding. Oh. I'm still going to vote for Nader. But Ralph, if you're out there, buddy, you know, I was doing that bit like a year ago. No, I love Ralph. Ralph's done my show since the very beginning. And, of course, you know, he is an icon, and as far as I'm concerned, as people go who live in Washington and maintain their integrity, I certainly don't agree with him on every issue. I mean, I'll be honest with you, if he had a chance to win, I would have to look at this again. But I'm voting for Mr. Nader because, one, he does have incredible integrity. He actually is a politician who's getting up there and not pandering. He's saying what he truly believes. On many issues, we agree, like the drug war, like campaign finance, like the environment, big important issues like that. Not so much about economic stuff. But that's okay. You know, you never agree with anybody 100%. And I think what is most important in this election is building a framework for a third party. I just don't know where else in American life people would put up with having only two choices, especially when they're the two that we get stuck with in an election like this. So, yes, he's not going to win this time, but I highly resent these people who say, you know, you're not patriotic because you're going to wind up electing Bush. Well, maybe I don't think you're so patriotic for perpetuating this completely corrupt and broken system. I think a new start has to be made. So we have a difference of opinion, but don't say it's because we're unpatriotic that we're voting for Ralph Nader, or somehow it's an ego trip.
Well, how would you feel if the Nader vote tipped the election in favor of Bush?
I wouldn't care that much. I mean, I don't think Gore is that. I do think he's a better he would be a better president. He is certainly smarter, which is not hard to do when you're running against George Bush. And he's more qualified. And I just resent someone like Bush running, you know, basically as a case of entitlement to a job as high as the presidency. But Al Gore is deeply flawed, in my view, in many ways. And I also think he is a compromiser on many important issues like the environment, where he talks a lot, but I don't know if he really walks the walk. And sometimes, you know, you have to see how bad things can get before they get better. So it's impossible to predict how, in the long run, the country would best be served by a sort of compromising Gore presidency, or by what probably will be environmentally a Bush disastrous presidency, but might excite people in the movement to get really serious about guarding our environment when they see what happens when someone who is owned by the oil companies gets into the White House.
You think it's pretty silly to evaluate a candidate on whether he has a good sense of humor or not. Nevertheless, I'm wondering if you think that any of the candidates have done things that struck you as very inadvertently funny.
Well, Bush speaks a language all his own that only his father could love. Yes, Bush says lots of things that are funny, like, I want to help you put food on your family. There's a whole list of them I read recently, but that's okay. I don't even hold that against him. We all misspeak, especially when you're in a position as he is, where you have to basically speak all day long and people are writing down what you are saying. I don't hold that against him. I don't hold against him that he doesn't know who the leaders of many foreign countries are. Very few people do who don't spend a lot of time in the State Department. So gaffes like that don't bother me. You know, I thought it was indicative when he said major league asshole, because, I mean, here's a guy who's running on integrity. And integrity means, you know, having one face. And he literally was two-faced at that moment. He was smiling and waving to the crowd while under his breath he utters this sort of snide, guttural remark. I mean, it wasn't a horrible thing to say. It's a word everybody uses all the time. But we're not all running on the Restore Honor Integrity platform.
What about Gore? Has he done things that struck you as inadvertently funny?
Well, Gore, I can't, you know, he doesn't mangle the language like Bush. He looked funny at that first debate. He was all charted up with that makeup. That was pretty funny. No, he's, you know, he's much more sort of plodding and calculated. He's extremely calculating, you know. I mean, he's been doing this a lot longer, so he tends to slip up in the minor ways a lot less. He does, you know, have that problem with sort of exaggerating. But the truth is that a lot of the things that he said, even though he won't even fight for them because he knows that it's a losing battle against late-night comedians who make jokes about his image, but a lot of those things are not so ridiculous. I mean, he didn't quite invent the Internet, but he didn't say he invented the Internet. He said he took the lead in developing this, and that actually is the truth. I mean, Newt Gingrich said the same thing. Lots of people who have actually studied the issue. He was in Congress at a time when the Internet was just sort of a nascent operation that was being used only in military areas. And he saw that this was something that could be very valuable to people in the future for civilian uses. So it was sort of unfortunate the way it came out. And then once that sort of, you know, image got hung around his neck, he was dead as far as trying to talk his way out of it. But, you know, if that's the worst quality that he has, it would be good. Unfortunately, it's not the worst quality that he has.
And what do you think is?
That he doesn't have a spine, that he doesn't stand up as he keeps shouting at every rally, I'm going to fight for you, I'm going to fight for you. He doesn't seem to want to fight for the, how many is it, 500,000 Americans who are rotting in jail as nonviolent drug offenders. I don't see him fighting for them, the guy who smoked so much pot when he was in college and living in Tennessee. Somehow he doesn't need to fight for those people.
Have the Bush or Gore campaigns called your office to complain about any of the sketches you've done or any of the comments that you've made on the show?
I don't think candidates ever call any TV show and complain. If they did, it would only give that show much more fodder to work with. I mean, because what are they going to do? What are they? I mean, what possible good could complaining do? I'm going to hear that and go, oh, you know what? You're right, George. You're a well-qualified man with a lot of integrity, and I don't know what I was thinking. No, I mean, I would probably air their complaints. What they can do to me, and they have done to me, is not let me get near them, because when I found out that they wouldn't do my show way back, I tried to get credentials so that I could, you know, stop by at a campaign rally and at least call out a question, but they won't, you know, they won't let me within 100 feet of them, which I wear as a badge of honor.
What question would you have called out?
To Bush? Some of the things we're talking about now. Why won't you talk about the drug war? Why is your integrity off limits? You know, he has that campaign commercial that says, disagree with me about the issues, but don't question my integrity. Well, I would just want to know why, of all politicians in the world, his integrity is just out of bounds for questioning. It seems like we do that with almost, no, not almost, all politicians. We question their integrity. He questions Gore's all the time. He says, the man has a lot of trouble telling the truth. The man exactly, well, that's questioning his integrity. Why is his out of bounds?
The undecided voters have been playing a particularly big role in this campaign. And, you know, some of the networks after each debate had a focus group of undecided voters who they would question when the debate was over and see if they budged at all and what they thought the high points and the low points were. What do you think of the emphasis this year on the undecided voter?
Well, I've been saying for the past, oh, I guess, 3 or 4 weeks that if you're still undecided, you are a moron. How much time do you need? I mean, this thing has been going on for 2 years, and I only lose my patience with the undecideds because I do feel that if they could hurry up and make their minds a little sooner, we could get these elections out of the way faster, and they wouldn't have to go on and on and on. You know, in England, they stand for election. It takes 6 weeks. Here we run, and it's never ending. I don't know what these people are waiting for. I don't know what these guys could possibly do or say at this point that they haven't done or said. We don't need all this time running. I think it's very, very harmful to the process, which, of course, is irretrievably, at this moment, broken and corrupt anyway, and unless we get some sort of serious campaign finance going. But if they're going to have a comprehensive campaign finance bill, I think it would be a swell idea if they would include something about, why don't we just limit the amount of time we run to something sensible and civilized? Because no one is paying attention, apparently, for the first 2 years of it. So why don't we just have them get up during, I don't know, the fall, October, something. They don't really have that much to say. What they're saying isn't that truthful to begin with. You know, this nonsense about, we got to get our message out. Get your message out. To where? The caves of Carlsbad? I mean, who has any interest in actually voting hasn't heard the message ad nauseum. So I just don't understand that undecided thing. And you know, when I say that in my stand-up act, people just practically get out of their seats and cheer. So I know it must be hitting some kind of a nerve.
My guest is Bill Maher, the host of Politically Incorrect. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Maher is my guest. He's the host of Politically Incorrect. During the impeachment, you ridiculed the Republicans leading the impeachment for being obsessed with Clinton's sex life. How do you think President Clinton will be remembered?
In the short term, the same way as he is now, which is silly and hypocritical and petty. With time, he will be remembered as an extremely effective president, perhaps a great president. Certainly no other country in the world would have obsessed over what happened to him. I guess that's putting it too much in the passive voice. He did commit the sin himself. And in my view, his big error was not the sin itself, which of course is not admirable, but come on, the man was in the 22nd year of a business-like marriage in a very high-stress job. I don't think it was so outlandish that he should get a little sex on the side, excuse me. But he should not have said, I never had sex with that woman. He should have said, it's none of your business. That is the one thing that I actually admire about George Bush, is that I don't know how much cocaine he did back in the 70s. I don't think it was very much. He just doesn't seem like the guy, the type of guy. He seems like the kind of guy when people were doing cocaine at a party, they would go in the bedroom and leave him out. And the New York Times did a fairly exhaustive study. They couldn't find anybody who ever did cocaine with George Bush. So whether he did it once, twice, whatever he did, what I like is that he says, I'm not going to play this game. I'm just not going to answer the question because it's a question that should not be asked. And that's what President Clinton should have done. Okay, having said that, I think his legacy will be fine. I mean, he presided over an era of unrivaled prosperity and falling rates and crime and welfare and teenage pregnancy, everything that the Republicans had been crowing that we needed to have happen in this country pretty much happened under William Horndog Clinton. So there's your wanton libertine. You know, all those sort of indicators of a healthier society went in the right direction under this guy. And, you know, I'm just amazed that considering the lies that politicians have told this country just in my lifetime, that we were winning the war in Vietnam, that we didn't break into the Watergate, that Clarence Thomas was this qualified person to be on the court, that Kennedy was shot by a lone gunman, that we weren't trading arms for hostages, that global warming isn't real, all these incredible lies, and the one that people can't get over is that, you know, Clinton got his hat blocked in the Oval Office. It just is unbelievable to me that they have no perspective about lying.
Bill Maher is my guest, the host of Politically Incorrect. Oh, you know, joining us on today's show is also Al Franken, who wrote for years for Saturday Night Live, and he's been writing for the Gore campaign and doing stump speeches for Gore. Could you ever imagine yourself writing for a presidential candidate who you supported?
No. No, I don't think so. First of all, I mean, I'm only laughing because just the way my mind works, the kind of things that I say, no politician would ever want to go near it with a 10-foot pole. I mean, politically incorrect means the opposite of being political. Being political means being careful and spinning everything and giving it a varnish and not offending anyone. And basically, you know, sort of half lying most of the time. But the basis of my show and the meaning of that phrase, politically incorrect to me, is total honesty. And no politician can ever, you know, run with a policy of total honesty. They pretty much have to run with a policy of total dishonesty.
Now, you would describe yourself as cynical. I mean, your HBO special was even called Be More Cynical. Do you think that this election is making you any more or less cynical about American politics?
My cynicism is not the problem. This is what I do for a living. So, you know, I have a healthy dose of cynicism. What I was saying in my special is I was encouraging the American public to become more cynical and to not be fooled when people say we're too cynical, because I promise you, we are not too cynical. That is not the problem. We are too naive, which is sort of the opposite of being too cynical. We swallow too much bull. Look at this election. You know, I mean, the people who want to put Bush in office because they want to have a beer with him, that person needs to get a lot more cynical. And as I said in the special, Do I want us to get as cynical as the people who make campaign ads? No, because that's the ultimate cynic. That's someone who knows how to manipulate people who aren't bright enough to see through what they're doing, and they know it. No, I don't want us to get to that degree of cynicism. I want us to get to be cynical enough to see through the ads, to see through what they're doing, to discount the things they say that should be discounted. But obviously it's not going to happen this time.
What are you going to be doing on election night?
I don't know. We're not working because obviously ABC's covering the election all night, so we would never even get on the air. So I don't think I'll be working. I'll probably be watching the returns at home. And then when it's decided, go out and get drunk.
Bill Maher, thank you so much for talking with us.
Okay, thank you.
Bill Maher is the host of ABC TV's Politically Incorrect. You may be wondering why we heard from one political satirist supporting Gore and another supporting Nader, but we didn't have one supporting Bush. Well, we extended the invitation to several conservative comics and satirists, but they told us they couldn't fit us into their schedules, with the exception of Rush Limbaugh. When his producer learned we were calling from an NPR show, he said, "We have to respectfully decline." We also contacted the Bush-Cheney 2000 headquarters in Austin numerous times to ask for a comic or satirist writing for Bush as a counterpart to Al Franken, but they never got back to us with suggestions. We haven't given up the search yet. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross. Happy Halloween.
We're going out tonight to break some things. We've dined on lemonade and pigeon's wings. We'll set your shoes on fire and then your hair. We're kind of ugly, but we don't care. Scooby Dooby Dooby. And Mrs. Brown lives in the flat below. All our attentions we do bestow. We're kind of neighbors that do things right. We'll bumble her with all our might.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From BEA, an e-commerce transactions company providing end-to-end solutions for the development and deployment of e-business applications. BEA.com. And from Random House Incorporated's Harmony Books Division, publishers of Mom's Marijuana, a memoir by NPR contributor Dan Shapiro. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, to better understand the current Israeli-Palestinian crisis, we look at some of the ancient and recent history of Jerusalem and its holy sites. We talk with religion scholar Karen Armstrong, author of Jerusalem and A History of God. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.